This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. And your numbers are 877-217-5757 and 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. The email is talk@talklouisiana.org. Coming in a bit, we'll hear from the fabled folk singer, Loudon Wainwright III, is also on the show today. We're scheduled to talk with Leo Noscintelli, the legendary guitarist with the Meters, who will be in Baton Rouge tonight. Before we get to J.R. Ball, the executive editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, a British territory has been pummeled by Hurricane Irma. The storm continues to tear a trail of devastation in the Caribbean on its path to Florida. Howling winds of up to 175 miles per hour battered the Turks and Caicos Islands early today. And as the worst ever Atlantic storm rages toward the United States mainland, where it's due to make landfall on Sunday, the death toll rose to 14. It's going to, of course, soar higher than that. Irma's now tracking a path toward the Bahamas before moving to Cuba and forecast to hit southern Florida on Sunday. Right now, about 150 mile per hour winds, a Category 4 storm, and hopefully the winds will diminish just a bit before it hits Florida. But it's going to be a devastating storm no matter what happens, and we will follow it. 877-217-5757. J.R. Ball spent 8 years as the executive editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, left to go to NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune for 4 years, and he's back, 2 months back, at the house that Rolf built, now celebrating its 35th anniversary. And he did before, writing provocative columns, and his latest is, Should LSU Charge on Degree Value? And J.R. writes that given the present-day view that LSU is a little more than a user-funded job training facility with a good football team and a cute new live mascot, the old war school needs to start charging based on the value of its degrees. Are you kidding?
Well, I wish I was kidding. I'm saddened by the turn that we've taken in this state as it relates to higher education. But if we're going to go all in on this notion that largely higher ed should be funded by the user, the students and their parents, and if LSU is going to constantly put out, you don't hear LSU, what you hear from LSU and other institutions is, you know, what the graduates go on to earn 5 years out of college, or how little debt or how much debt they tend to have, and how getting an education from college XYZ is this great value. I'm simply saying, look, if we're going to turn this thing into pure, we exist to prepare people for jobs, then let's charge based on the value of what that degree is and the cost of giving that degree. It costs a lot more to deliver a STEM-related degree or an engineering degree than it does a liberal arts degree. Yet the liberal arts major and the engineering major are paying the same tuition. So the liberal arts major is subsidizing the education of the engineer. Why, in the world of which we've turned higher ed, that's not right.
Okay, well, here's an example that J.R. points out in his column. According to LSU Research, someone who graduates from the Manship School of Mass Communication earns an average starting salary of $35,000. Given the new world of academia, J.R. writes, why should those graduates pay the same tuition and fees as someone averaging $81,000 as a freshly minted chemical engineer does? So you're saying that some degrees are twice or more the value of others.
Well, what the point of that is that if you say that it's X for a liberal arts major to deliver that education, and let's just say it's X plus 100 for an engineering major, not only is the liberal arts major subsidizing because they're all paying straight across the board, but then what ends up happening is the debt load that is on that liberal arts major is much more difficult to deal with postgraduate because of the low starting salary. The engineer who's making $80,000 has a much greater capacity to cover the debt related to the education that he or she received at LSU or whatever university he or she went to.
877-217-5757, and J.R. Ball is correct in saying that King Alexander, the president and chancellor at LSU, has made a case that Louisiana State University is a place where you can go and come out and make good money. And here is the president yesterday talking about this exact subject.
I think when you're starting salaries and your mid-career earnings are better than half of the Big Ten. Your faculty and staff and your university is doing a pretty good job with our students and making them career ready.
All right. So J.R. Ball, the king is saying that things are going well for graduates, but you're saying they go much better for some than others.
Well, again, when you look at just the whole notion of the state, it's all about why should one group subsidize another group? We have this conversation all the time. We have it in healthcare. We have it when we talk about our taxes. Why do the rich have to keep subsidizing the poor? I mean, everybody's talking about subsidies, subsidies, subsidies. The reality is LSU is overcharging. Whether you can come up with a flat, this, when I say tuition, I'm talking about tuition and fees. That's the all-in right. number. LSU is overcharging for one set of majors. It's undercharging for another set so that they can come with a streamlined baseline number. I'm just simply saying, look, it's great that engineers make $80,000 and journalists make $35,000. That's just the way the world works. But the cost to educate a journalist is far less than the cost to educate an engineer. Why should that journalist subsidize the education of the engineer?
877-217-5757. Controversial words from J.R. Ball. Before we go to the phone lines, there some are going to say, J.R., that a college degree is just part of the package, that there's much more to going to college that has immense value beyond what a student would earn getting out of school.
Well, I agree, and I wish there was more of that being discussed. I mean, and I talk about that in the column where, again, I wish we would focus and deal a lot more with the broader benefits of higher education and what can be achieved and learned by students while on a college campus. But all we're hearing is the student should pay for his or her education, and as King Alexander just said, look at the kind of money you make on the back end. There's nothing about look how you're a much better person.
All right, 877-217-5757 and 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. We start with Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Always a great conversation. Always a great conversation.
Thank you.
The crux is this. If a liberal arts person, a major, paid a certain amount and was guaranteed $30,000 a year, and a engineer or a doctor was, you know, prorated at $100,000 a year, and they actually get out in the field, and the doctor winds up working at a charity hospital and makes $30,000 a year, and the liberal arts becomes the editor of the New York Times, makes $100,000. Do you get a refund?
Well,
what do you think?
No, yeah, right. And look, I don't. And the one fatal flaw of my column, in all honesty, is I focus too much on what the salary was on the back end. Where I should have spent a heck of a lot more time is on the actual cost to educate the engineer. So just to pick easy numbers, if it costs $150 to provide a degree to an engineer, mm-hmm. but it costs $100 for a journalism major, LSU is essentially charging $125 across the board. So that journalism major is paying an extra $25, and the engineering major is getting a $25 discount on his engineer on that degree. I'm just saying, if we're going to make this a pure, you go to college to go get trained for a job, then charge the person the actual cost of training for that job.
J.R. Ball, executive editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, is with us. Still time to talk with him, 297-5633 and 877-217-5757. Jim in Leesville. Hi, Jim. You're on Talk Louisiana with J.R. Ball.
Thank you. So my question here is, would you be talking about, like, a la carte pricing per class type? So, you know, taking those first 2 years of core classes that everyone takes regardless of degree or major would have like a flat fee, and then after that your medical classes would be priced one way per credit hour, engineering core classes another way. I'm not clear on how you're deriving the value of the particular education.
Yeah, in general, that would be, look, I'm fine with a flat tuition rate, and then what you would then do is you would have fees based on what that particular course you were taking. And I understand engineering majors have already told me, hey, we're already paying lab fees and all that. The reality when I talk to people at LSU is those lab fees don't come close to covering the actual cost of those lab courses. But so it would really, you can keep the flat tuition, and then depending on what course you're talking about, you then charge a specific fee to balance out the cost of that course.
Thank you, Jim. Now, previous Chancellor John Lombardi, president, he said that tuition was too low at LSU. Now, it's been raised since he left, but he believed everybody was getting a bargain.
That's probably true. And a strong case could be made for that. But again, I'm always going to go back to when we talk about tuition in the modern era. And look, I don't like this. This is not the way I think higher education should be. But if we're going to have it this way, the value should be on, you know, what's the quality of an LSU degree versus one from some other state institution?
877-217-5757, your number, back in a few minutes. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing. The show is Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Your number is 877-217-5757, wherever you are. J.R. Ball, executive editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, is with us. And in his latest column, he says LSU should charge on degree value. He says, think of it this way. Does Ruth's Chris charge the same for a petite filet and a T-bone steak? I think not, writes J.R., and neither should LSU. What do you think? Let's go to the Garden District, and it's Nick in the Garden District. Nick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, I'm actually an LSU student right now, and I just wanted to call and say, I mean, you're talking about charging different prices for different degrees and that they have different values, but, I mean, we've also spent a ton of money renovating a stadium, putting $85 million into the UREC, but yet tuition prices went up this year, even though the state, like, closed the higher education gap. I just wanted to see if you'd comment on that, and I'll take my answer up there.
Well, you know, we're always going to get into the issue when you start talking about the athletic stuff, because that's a separate pool, a pot of money that's sort of not in the – that's self-generated money, or it's money coming in from donors to the Tiger Athletic Foundation. That's probably a whole nother conversation. As it relates to the UREC, my understanding, and I'm not an expert, is that that was built off of fees that students – voted to put upon themselves in order to do that. If I'm wrong, I apologize. I just know way back when I was at LSU, we voted some fee on ourselves for the first version of the UREC, and I paid it for 3 or 4 years. It still wasn't built. I hadn't stepped foot in it. I think I deserve a rebate. I paid 3 years of fees, and they never got the dang thing built while I was on campus.
Well, some of the facilities obviously are available to everybody, whether you're a journalism major or an English major or an engineering major. So that there would be an argument that we have the same university for everybody, so why shouldn't everybody pay the same?
Well, I think everybody should pay those fees. I mean, if you're paying a UREC fee, that's an across-the-board fee. Again, I'm also fine if you just say we're going to have a base tuition of, you know, $8,000 a semester or, you know, whatever you want. The way you then handle the section as it relates to your major is through the use of fees per course. And for those who wonder, what do you do about the underserved community? Look, that's where, if it's that big of a deal, that's where the state can provide funding to help offset those fee costs for low-income students. If we're trying to help low-income students get into STEM programs and engineering and whatnot, heck, music is a very expensive major. But if we want to encourage that, fine. Take state money and put it in that to offset the cost to the low-income student.
AJ writes, how about we do like Australia does and charge people based on the repayment of the loan based on their salary after graduation? So if you become a social worker, you don't end up having to pay as much for your degree as if you were a petrochemical engineer. That's from AJ.
Yeah, I think, you know, there may be flaws on some of that. What I would probably be in favor of is making the repayment of TOPS. If you leave the state, like if you basically are just if you go to LSU, graduate, and then move to another state, we could perhaps look at you then have to repay a portion of your TOPS. If you remain in Louisiana, you get to keep TOPS free and clear. You could try to look at that.
Marie writes, science professors support the whole university with their grants. I guess the point being that the whole university benefits from grants for a particular entity. So when we go down this path, we're going to start nitpicking in many ways.
Correct. I mean, you know, I think a university benefits if a journalism major wins a Pulitzer. I mean, we can go down. I mean, all of these things. Or has LSU benefited from Bill Conti being one of with the music that he's done? So we can go on and on about all of these things. This is strictly a matter. And look, I want to be very, very clear. This column was not something I'm passionate about. This was like a reaction to, if this is the level of where we're going in higher education, where it's strictly about student goes to LSU and all we're celebrating is how much he or she earns and how this is a great thing. And if we're going to just make it a pure economic bargain, and that's all that's talked about, then let's start go all in on this economic bargain and just simply say your total cost is going to be based on what it took to educate you.
877-217-5757 is your number, and J.R. Ball has opened up a can of worms. And, of course, higher ed has been slammed hard, as we know, over the last decade in funding, so universities are looking for every dollar they can get. And the last thing, J.R., as you kind of allude to in your column, is universities, they don't want another cut in funding, and if we had some kind of tuition adjustment, would that perhaps result in a cut that the universities receive?
I've just really been consistent in that it is clear the state is getting out of the funding of higher education, and it has become a system to where if you want a degree, you're going to pay the lion's share of that cost. And that's fine if that's where we want to go with the state. I think there are downsides to that. But if we're going to go in that direction, let's not just stick our toe into it. Let's go all in on that.
Well, J.R. writes in his column, no longer do we hear about the molding of mankind, the greater glory, or the groundbreaking research that will perhaps make life easier and healthier for us all. Instead, we're bombarded with reports on how much an LSU graduate earns and how little debt he or she carries. And the truth is that a good portion of the student body is on TOPS. So if we were to make the adjustment that you're recommending, ultimately, the taxpayers would be involved in this, wouldn't they?
No, because if you kept tuition flat and you did it by fees, TOPS doesn't cover fees.
So you're saying TOPS would not cover a lot of the expenses that are now covered
of the package? Well, I guess that would be up to the legislature. But now the other thing I would do is I would get, if we're going to go this route, let's get the legislator out of the whole tuition business altogether. I understand you can't just simply say the tuition for one major is this and tuition for another major is that. It gets crazy. What happens when you start switching majors? There's all 20 million different problems with that. That's why I've kind of settled on, look, when I talk about tuition, I'm just talking about the all-in number. And if you do it by fees, TOPS is not impacted. If there is a $900 fee for a particular lab course, that's not going to be covered by TOPS. That's on the student.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with J.R. Ball, and then we go to Loudon Wainwright III. But J.R.'s proposing that LSU should charge on degree value. And one prominent professor yesterday told me that he likes the idea, but says getting this through the hoops that would be necessary to implement it, that it's impossible, that it's not going to happen. Your response?
He's probably right. In fact, I'd say he's definitely right.
So It's a nice conversation piece, but if it can't be done, then what options are left?
Well, the underlying theory of the piece was to hopefully get folks to start thinking about, is this really the way we want higher education to be? When we were at LSU, I mean, there was so much more to the college experience that stands out to me than what happened in any particular classroom. It was being exposed to new ideas. It was the idea of free discussion and free debate. It's not like now where we don't allow certain viewpoints on a campus. It was a much more enriching And rewarding experience from the standpoint of opening up our minds, teaching, using both the left and right brain. And I think we're slowly getting away from that. And I know LSU will sit there and they will come out with plans to talk about how they're doing bigger and better things. But at the end of the day, the common driver is that it is a pure economic bargain. You come to LSU, we will train you to be this particular job, and off you'll go with limited debt and high income.
Lastly, you point an accusing finger at Governor Jindal for some of the quandaries that higher ed is having. Were you too hard on our former governor?
No. I mean, he created the budget problem when he got rid of Stelly. However, I think if you go back and look at the record, it was clear the former governor felt like higher education was bloated. There was a lot of waste and inefficiency in higher education, mm-hmm. and he was going to get that under control. And I don't even say he's necessarily wrong on that point. There is a lot of waste and inefficiency in higher education. But he's the one who set us on this path of just saying, you know what, we are not going to have the state fund higher education to the levels it did in the past.
Well, J.R. Ball, it is always a pleasure, and you can read J.R. every issue of the Baton Rouge Business Report, the executive editor, and we'll return with Loudon Wainwright III after the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster, and we're pleased at this time to have Loudon Wainwright III, the son of the esteemed Life magazine columnist, Loudon Wainwright Jr., the patriarch of one of America's great musical families, and now the author of Liner Notes, his autobiography on parents and children, exes and excess, death and decay, and a few of my other favorite things. Good morning, Loudon Wainwright.
Good morning, Jim. Nice talking to you.
It's fair to say you've had a full life.
Yeah, it's been lots of thrills and spills and good stuff and weird stuff and some bad stuff. But I have had a good, interesting life.
Well, you write poignantly about being the son and the son of a famous father. How was that experience?
It was a mixed bag. My dad had a column in Life magazine throughout the 1960s and 70s and 80s when everybody, you know, it was on every coffee table in America. And so he was famous, and it's Loudon is a kind of strange, peculiar name, so it kind of has a ring to it. So I was Loudon Wainwright, the son of the famous Loudon Wainwright, and that was kind of a drag, actually. I think that, you know, fathers and sons have a competitive thing going on anyway, but since my dad was a known, he wasn't a celebrity, but he was, people knew who he was when I was growing up, so it made me a little uncomfortable, but by the same token, you know, he was a great writer, and he died in 1988, but his work really holds up. And one of my decisions when it came time to write my book was I wanted to include his writing in the book, and I do that. There's five or six selections of his work in the book. So I'm very proud and happy that with the idea that people will also be able to read my dad's work in addition to my own writing.
How supportive was he of your success?
Well, I think, you know, any parent is proud when their kid does well, And he experienced pride in that, but also I talk about this in the book, and this would have to do with him and also with me. You know, when your kid steps out and does something that gets a lot of attention, sometimes you can think, hey, but what about me? Bring that spotlight back over to me. And I think there was a certain I know that was an aspect of my relationship with my father, and it's also been an aspect of my relationship with my own kids. I have four kids, and three of them are performers. There's pride and smattering of egotistical jealousy.
At least you're honest about it, and that's been a big part of your life, both as a son and as a father.
Yeah, I don't know if honesty is always the best policy, but I have, the songs are crafted, and there's artifice involved in the making of the songs, but a lot of the topics that I write about are, you know, what happened to me in my life, and pretty much the truth of it. I think it works on the level that people recognize that truth, because what happened to me happens to everybody. You know, it's not, my life hasn't been all that really unusual, but I have written, I've tried to write honestly anyway about my aspects of my life.
Now, you were married to a famous singer-songwriter. That marriage ended in divorce, and you have been forthcoming in noting that you made some mistakes.
Yeah, I married Kate McGarrigle. She was my first wife, of Kate and Anna McGarrigle, a terrific artist. Kate and Anna are great artists, and they made wonderful records, and... And so there we were as young people with careers. You know, we were traveling and writing and playing for people, and the life was chaotic. And certainly a nice word would be I misbehaved. You know, I had fooled around and was unfaithful, actually, is the correct expression, I suppose. And the marriage obviously suffered from that, and eventually, as you say, it broke up. It just goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
I Suzzy Roach, who another a wonderful singer and performer and actress and writer also, and I lived together for 9 years, and she was in the group The Roaches in the 80s, late 70s and 80s, and Suzzy and I have a daughter who's a singer, Lucy Wainwright Roach. Suzzy and I have remained the best of friends. I mean, I just saw her 2 nights ago. But our, again, because of the chaotic lifestyle of both people in the relationship, traveling and performing, and my own proclivities, I think that relationship also had to end.
Your career took some twists and turns early on, and even though you were the son of a famous and successful person, you worked some tough jobs, and I understand you actually sold your first guitar for yoga lessons, is that correct?
Yeah, I went out to San Francisco for the Summer of Love, 1967, so that's 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And I had a guitar. I wasn't writing songs yet, but I was certainly playing music, and but I became enthralled with yoga, and I needed to pay for my yoga lessons, so I decided to sell my guitar, and I did that. And eventually I got another guitar, fortunately. But I dabbled in all that counterculture stuff, and it was a fun time out there in San Francisco in 1967.
I bet it was. But shortly thereafter, you started having... the kind of success that few people have. And in 1972, Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road, that made you a superstar. Did that change everything?
Got to number 12 nationally, and in Little Rock, Arkansas, it was number one for 6 weeks. So, yeah, it certainly changed things. I became the skunk guy. And after that, and that got to be a problem because, you know, when I made my next record, there wasn't a funny song on it about an animal. And the record company was scratching their head and saying, hey, come on, you're the skunk guy. But I made a lot of money that year. And I'm sure it's going to be in my obituary, Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road.
That's right.
It was a good thing on some levels and not such a good thing on others.
Well, I was in Little Rock. I was living there. I was 14 at the time when you were number one for 6 weeks on KAAY, the Mighty 1090. And I remember Loudon Wainwright III well. But since then, your career has been synonymous with writing about very personal things. How is that experience, letting the world know who you are and what's going on in your life through your art?
Well, that was just my choice. You know, my life was my waterfront that I covered. The first line in my first song on my first record was In Delaware When I Was Younger. It's a song about going to this boarding school that I went to. So I've always had this tendency or propensity to write autobiographically, and the characters in a lot of the songs are the people in my actual family. So That's just the way it went. I don't know why. I mean, a huge influence and hero of mine, of course, any singer-songwriter would be Bob Dylan. And I was, at the beginning of my career, people were saying, oh, look, here comes the new or the next Bob Dylan. But whereas his work is much more mysterious and cryptic and hidden, my songs are kind of lay it out there. I think it's just two different ways of going, and I went with laying it out there.
Well, you are well known, of course, for your music, but some people remember you as the singing surgeon on MASH. It's amazing what television does to enhance the persona of a performer.
Yeah, MASH was, the biggest show in America at that time. This would have been the third season, 1975. I was Captain Calvin Spaulding, the singing surgeon. And a lot of people saw it. It's probably being shown on reruns as we speak. It was a lot of fun, and I only was really in three episodes, but it's going to be in that obituary of mine, you can be sure of that.
You're right. Well, Stephen Holden of the New York Times, who, by the way, is a tough reviewer, he says Mr. Wainwright wrings more human truth out of his contradictions than any other songwriter of his generation. That is high praise.
I sent Stephen that big check, and he came up with it. I really appreciate it.
Well, Loudon, you were born in September of 46, and by the way, happy birthday.
Thanks.
And three U.S. presidents, Trump, June 46, Bush, July, Clinton, August, they were born, boom, 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 same time you were. It was an interesting time in our country, and it's amazing, right after World War II, how many interesting people were born and that are still relevant in our society today.
What an interesting observation. I hadn't really thought about the fact that three of those presidents were born in 46. Yeah. So a lot of dramatic events. There was the after World War II, things were booming in America, I went to Disneyland the year that it opened in 1956, and had a Davy Crockett coonskin cap when that whole thing was going down. I was a draft dodger. I mean, I got a psychiatrist to write a letter to get me out of going into the Army. And that was, a time of great upheaval. And then, as you mentioned, the San Francisco thing and the drug culture and women's liberation and rock and roll. I remember the first record I bought was All Shook Up by Elvis Presley. I also got that in 56. Yeah, it's been, and now we've got what's going on now, which is pretty exciting and strange, and goodness knows what'll happen. But it's been an interesting 70 years.
And we'll return after this quick pause and hear from Leo Noscintelli of the Meters on WRKN. This is Jim Eakster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Locally, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Ali Baltazar is producing, and we're joined now by another music legend, Leo Noscintelli, a man who was on the ground floor when the Meters began 50 years ago. And he is in Baton Rouge tonight. And good morning to you, Leo Noscintelli.
Hey, good morning to you and everybody within the sound of my voice.
Well, the Meters sound is, of course, defined by an earthy combination of melodic grooves and highly syncopated New Orleans second-line rhythms. You've had quite a half-century doing what you do, and you're still a relatively young man, but you began early. How did the Meters get it going back in the day?
Well, we kind of grew up together. We were like neighborhood friends and whatever, and Art Neville was the Neville brothers, Aaron Neville and Charles Neville and Cyril Neville. We all was playing together, man, and until the point where we got experienced enough and musically educated enough to start recording. And we recorded a song called Sissy Strut, and that's how the Meters eventuated. And and with the meters was myself, Art Neville, George Porter, and Zigaboo Modelis, and that's how the band was formed with the hit recording. The Strut came out and sold 250,000 copies, man, in about 2 weeks, and that's when it all started. And we did about 7 albums. We did 8. We did 3 with a record company called Josie Records out of New York that embodied Sissy Strut and a bunch of the hits, instrumental hits. Then we did 5 albums with Warner Brothers, Reprise. And just the music just kept on playing, and people started liking the meters. And we're still here, man. We're still performing. I'm doing the thing tonight, you know, at the Hartlett Vega.
Hartlett Vega Theater at the Manship. So you can hear this fine man, Leo Nocentelli, who's been doing this for a half century. And as I noted, he's not that old. He's the same age as our previous guest, Loudon Wainwright. Here he is. For those who would like to hear a great guitar player, here is the man. Nocentelli doing it like few others ever have, and the meters have been around for a half century, part of the fabric of New Orleans and part of the fabric of the music world wherever. And tonight at the Hartlett Vega Theater, you can hear Leo Nocentelli. When's the first time you played the guitar? Do you remember?
Oh, I was about 8 years old, man.
8 years
dad,
old.
Yeah, my dad bought a Leddy, man. As soon as I picked it up, I started playing it, and I've been doing it ever since. So, I mean, that's all I know. That's all I've ever done.
Well, along the way, you've rubbed shoulders with many of the greats. I know in 1975, Paul McCartney invited the Meters to play for the Venus and Mars album. That was something, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. Actually, it wasn't all the Meters. It was a few of us. It was myself. I think George did a track with the Venus and Mars album. But the real highlight of that whole relationship and that time, man, was we did a going away party after that for Paul and Linda on the Queen Mary. And, man, it was unbelievable. And Paul produced an album live on the Queen Mary that's out in circulation now. So that was really a pleasurable relationship and still is. I still talk to Paul every now and then.
That's great. He put on a fabulous show in New Orleans a few years ago.
Yeah.
Played over 50 songs.
Beautiful people, man. Beautiful person. Just unbelievable.
Yeah. Now, you broke up as a group, and usually when that happens, it's the end. Even if you get back together, it's not the same, but you were able to get it back together in a big way. How did it happen?
Well, you know, and to be honest with you, the music never changed. You know, I look at the Meters now, because we still perform now. We just did the Rose Bowl at, you know, with Tom Petty about a couple of months ago, and we have some other things that's going to happen in the future. But, you know, for some reason or another, man, these four guys, the music never suffered, you know, when we're on stage. It's just that everybody has their own individual pride, their own individual way of thinking about themselves. So when that happens, you know, and when collectively, it all makes it like we never broke up, you know? I mean, business is business. This is a brutal business, the music business, and there's always indifferences in terms of the musicians and the band, the people. You know, that's history, and history shows that happens with different bands. But, you know, you have to be able to work through it, and be able to at least get on stage and maybe do some recording with, because we all have fans. We owe it to our fans, and I think that's the main motivation for doing it. You know, because we all have individual things we're doing now musically. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the Meters get together, and we, you know, we do it for our fans.
You've played in many places. many places. You just mentioned the Rose Bowl. Do you have a favorite venue?
I think we toured with the Rolling Stones in 1976 or something like that, the Black and Blue album. And I think when I played, we played Earl's Court in England. I think that was a very memorable time. But, you know, when you're on stage, all of the venues kind of look the same. You know, you just go through the music and you do your job. It's just another place where you try to exploit what you do.
When you're playing in Louisiana, it's a special audience. What about Jazz Fest? Is that a good place to play?
Oh, yeah. That's one, I think that's, contrary to what I said, that's one that sticks out more than anything, you know, playing Jazz Fest, especially with the meters. It's always a special thing. As a matter of fact, with the meters or the Jazz Fest poster, we've been honored with that badge to be the 2017 Jazz Fest poster, which is a huge honor.
You've been nominated, the meters have, Leo, three times for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It seems induction will come at some point. That will be quite a highlight if and when it happens.
No doubt, man. I've been hoping that happens. You know, hope I'm still alive when it happens. And it would be an unbelievable honor internationally to get this award. You know, I'm pretty sure all the artists that have gotten it feel the same way. So it'll be a very, very awarding, man, to me. And I can't wait till it happens.
What keeps you going after all these years?
You know, I don't know, man. It's what I do. You know, it's what I do as a living. It's what I do to support my family. And as long as I'm able to play and have the dexterity and the mental fortitude to do it, you know, I'm going to do what I do. It's like anybody else. You know, a carpenter, you know, the actor carpenter said, what motivates you to build houses? You know, it's what he does.
Well, tonight at the Hartley Bay Theater, you can hear the fabulous Leo Nocentelli, who's been doing this for over a half century. Started when he was in high school with the original meters, and he's still going strong in the year of 2017. It's been an honor and pleasure. Thank you, Leo.
Well, thank you, and I just want to make sure that everybody comes out. You're going to hear some great, you know, I'm going to be doing a lot of stuff I wrote from the meters. Meter song, Hey Pocket Wave, Fire on the Bayou, they all act for you. So everybody that's in the sound of my voice, come on out to the Hartley Theater and be thoroughly entertained. We're going to burn the walls down.
I love your spirit. Thank you, Leo. Take care. And congratulations on your continuing success. And a few listeners said, why didn't you play any of Loudon Wainwright's music when he was on? And, you know, we've got a little time. Alec, let's go to 1972, his biggest hit, his signature song, Loudon Wainwright III.
Crossing the highway late last night, they should have looked left and they should have looked right. They didn't see the station wagon car, the skunk got squashed. There you are, you got your dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Stinking to high heaven.
As he said, that will be in his obituary. Loudon Wainwright III, who's had quite a life, and the book is liner notes, by the way, if you missed the conversation a little bit earlier. But a nice show today with Loudon and with Leo Nocentelli of the Meters and J.R. Ball, and we'll be back Monday, same time, same place. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.